Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Carrie Connor, and I'm here today on behalf of Vincent Barnett. In this case, there's really one single issue, and that is the issue of whether or not there was particularized and articulable suspicion to actually stop Vincent Barnett on this summer morning at 9 a.m., June 27th, in Gary, Indiana. And, Your Honor, we submit to you that there was not, and therefore that this case should, in fact, be remanded to the district court for further proceedings. In fact, Your Honor, what happened in this case was that Vincent Barnett and his brother, who were described as wearing jeans and black shirts, were walking down the public street on the edge of a residential community. Evidence was established that showed that literally hundreds of people live in the residential neighborhood. Pictures were provided both to the district court and have been attached as exhibits to our brief that show that, in fact, Mr. Barnett and his brother were walking on a street, crossing an alley, remaining on the sidewalk when they were stopped, very close to many homes in that residential community. In addition, we were able to establish that the intersection close by, which is at Georgia and Ridge Road, is a very busy intersection for vehicles, and in fact, traffic information was provided that approximately 8,800 vehicles cross that intersection in any given day.
Were they walking towards the store?
Yes, they were, Your Honor.
A block or so away from it?
Yes, and actually, Your Honor, Defendant's Exhibit A, which is part of appellant's opening brief and also was put into court, shows very clearly that it's actually even less than a block. It's almost kitty-corner behind the store. And in this case, Your Honor, as the facts have been established and there are no dispute about those facts, a gentleman was robbed in what we call a grab-and-run type of situation at the White store off of Ridge Road in Georgia. And when that happened, a 911 call went out describing a single suspect wearing a white T-shirt and blue jeans. There was the only other descriptive piece of information that was given about the suspect is that he was a black male. We have no age. We have no height. We have no other descriptive information other than he was seen running in a westerly direction from the store. According to the various dispatch transmissions and the testimony of the officers, it wasn't until approximately 5 minutes later that officers began patrolling the area. The first officer who arrived on the scene went directly to the White store and began to gather information there. But it wasn't until approximately 5 minutes later that an officer by the name of Colsey began driving around the area. He also picked up another individual who was wearing a white T-shirt and a pair of jeans during this time period, brought him back to the White store, and the victim in that case said, no, that's not our man. But the officer that stopped Mr. Barnett and his brother, Darvis, did not come into the area until approximately 15 minutes after the theft in this case. He then saw the two men walking toward the White store, in fact, almost upon the White store, when he stopped them. The district court and the government and the defense all agree in this case that we do have a Terry stop. That really is not an issue. However, what transpired, what is significant, is whether the facts in this circumstances really justified that stop and avoided suppression of a firearm that was ultimately produced at the request of the officer by Mr. Barnett. As we've outlined in detail in the various cases that come out of our jurisdiction as others on this matter, there simply is not an analogous case that has this scant of amount of individualized and particularized information to connect Vincent Barnett to anything that transpired at the White store. In fact, it flies in the face of common sense that an individual who had just robbed a store, fled from the scene, would be walking 24 minutes later toward the scene. In fact, I believe one of the officers actually admitted a baseball throw from where the incident had happened. Certainly, if the court is to affirm that these facts are sufficient for a Terry stop, what is so problematic is that virtually any black man walking down the street in Gary, Indiana, after the commission of an offense he may have known nothing about, and we're talking 24 minutes between the time of the 911 call in this case and the actual stop, 24 minutes, would expose virtually any black man under those circumstances to the Terry stop and the Fourth Amendment restriction. In this case, there's virtually no specificity on the description of the suspect. All we know is he's a black man. The original report from the 911 call has that man wearing a white T-shirt and blue jeans. Subsequently, another call goes out and says, no, he was wearing a blue shirt and black jeans, I believe. The third call goes out and suggests that there may have been two suspects, one wearing a dark-colored black shirt, is what was used, and a white-colored shirt. Here we then have 24 minutes after the report of the incident, Mr. Barnett and his brother walking down the sidewalk. There's no evidence of furtiveness. There's no evidence that they were sweating or any indication that they had been fleeing the scene. There's no indication whatsoever of any objective observation by the officer that brought these two men into suspicion. The only thing is that they are black men walking down the street in Gary, Indiana, in this case toward the incident. But other than that, we have nothing. And in fact, I think it's interesting to point out that the two men, as they walked, both had on dark shirts and dark pants. So even if we're to rely on the final description of a dark shirt and a white shirt, these two men simply do not meet that very scant description. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Lanter.
May it please the Court, Dean Lanter, Assistant United States Attorney representing the government in this matter. First of all, regarding the a couple clarifications regarding the facts of the incident. I believe the record supports that 911 call came in about 9:04 a.m. A couple minutes after that, the dispatch went out of a suspect, white shirt, blue jeans. A couple minutes after that, Corporal Head arrives at the store, talks to the victim, and gives an updated description in which he says, okay, now we have two suspects, one wearing blue jeans, black shirt, black jeans, blue shirt, check that, blue shirt, black jeans. Testimony at the hearing was that Corporal Head intended to change his initial description when he said, check that.
How many people in this general area would have kind of fit that description?
Well, the number of individuals on the street in this area in the 20 minutes from the time of the initial call to the stop were three individuals. The district court found, based on the record, that there may not have been any more than three individuals total pedestrians on the street. But Officer Faison, from the time of Corporal Head's dispatch, about 4 minutes after the 911 call, is patrolling up and down the streets from the west, heading toward the store, and saw no individuals at all on foot.
Mr. Barnett was a fairly tall guy. He was 6'2", I think.
Yes, he was.
And there was nothing like that to say over 6 feet tall, which would have cut down the number of potential.
There was no description of the height of the suspect given. However, it's the government's position, based on the very few pool of suspects in this time period, only three individuals on the street on foot at all, one wearing a white shirt, and two, matching the description of the dispatch from Corporal Head of a darker black shirt and blue jeans within such a short time frame of the scene of the crime.
But now, they were walking toward the store.
Correct. They were walking toward the store, however.
And the two that were stopped, there was neither one of them had a white shirt.
No, Your Honor. Both of them had black shirts on and blue jeans, which matched the description of one of the two suspects. And it's the government's position that with such a small pool of suspects, if one of the suspects is described as wearing black shirt, blue jeans, African-American male on foot, two individuals matching that description when no one else is on the street at all west of this store is sufficient reasonable suspicion. Ms. Connor had indicated 24 minutes had passed after the crime. I believe it was closer to 20 minutes from the time of the 911 call to the time that the subjects were stopped, disarmed, and a couple other officers that arrived was 24 minutes. So I believe a little bit less than that, a couple minutes less than that, when the officer had observed him.
Yeah, but in addition to no height, there was no description of hair or anything. In the main cases you rely on, there was something more.
In some of the cases, there was more.
In all of them, there's more. This is very thin.
Well, Your Honor, that's what the police had to go on in this case, is African-American male on foot, fled west of the store, two individuals, one wearing a dark or a black shirt and blue jeans, and within such a short time period after the scene of the crime, it's the government's position with so few, if no one else, on the street. It would be a different circumstance, obviously, if the streets were filled with people, or really if there were many more pedestrians on the street. But I believe the issue is, in this case, with so few people matching the description and hardly anyone on the street at all, whether someone matching the description of one of the two suspects given, African-American male on foot, blue jeans, dark shirt, that is sufficient for the minimal intrusion that had occurred in this case. The case law has also indicated that various discrepancies from the initial indication are okay when what you're talking about is reasonable suspicion. The government had cited a case in which I believe Wimbush, in which the color of the vehicle was purple instead of a maroon or a burgundy color vehicle, but because that vehicle was seen approximately 8 blocks from the crime scene 15 minutes later, that was sufficient to support reasonable suspicion. And we're not talking about a major intrusion into a person to satisfy reasonable suspicion. Obviously, if more time had passed or if there were more people on the street, it would be a different circumstance. But it's the government's position that the officers acted in this case reasonably when, from the time of the initial dispatch, Officer Faison is canvassing streets north and south from a westerly direction heading toward the mart, and the only individual on foot observed in that entire area are two individuals, both matching the description that had been given. Government also cited
And then how do you distinguish this Mitchell case? Because it was the police sought black or white males in white T-shirts near the crime scene, and it was determined that that was insufficient.
I'm not immediately familiar with the Mitchell case. There's been a lot of different cases cited in here. But it's the government's position that Seventh Circuit case law firmly or would support the government's position here. In United States versus Askew, the Seventh Circuit said that reasonable suspicion was firmly established when a suspected drug buyer arrived at a scheduled time at a parking lot, even though he was not driving the white Cadillac that was suspected. In United States versus Swift, Seventh Circuit had no trouble upholding a Terry stop of a red vehicle an hour and 23 minutes after a robbery, even though there was a discrepancy in the license plate The 911 dispatch had indicated the license plate was 71E and the vehicle stopped was 71A, supporting the position that minor discrepancies, including a change in direction, are something that do not undermine reasonable suspicion.
That Mitchell case came out of the Sixth Circuit. It was a 1983 case, and a man told the police he was assaulted and robbed by a group of four or five men in white T-shirts, some of whom were white and some of whom were black. And then a few blocks later, a few blocks away, a black man was stopped in a faded blue T-shirt, and the court held that wasn't sufficient. That was the Mitchell case out of the Sixth Circuit.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, there was nobody else on the streets in this area. Very few pedestrians on the streets, if anyone else. And at the end of the day, I guess it comes down to when there's no one else on the streets, when do the police, how long after a crime occurs are the police required to shut down looking for an individual when there's a strong-arm robbery like this that would take place? Obviously, the government would say an hour is way too much time. In this case, I believe we were probably on the outer bounds of it, and the police testified that if these two individuals that were stopped about 20 minutes after the scene didn't match, weren't the ones, then they would have to call off their search. Under these facts, given a not overly particular description, but a specific description nonetheless, that did limit the pool of applicants to only three people being pulled over, it's the government's position that this was reasonable given the limited intrusion. Thank you.
There was nothing.
We've had some recent decisions that have talked about the exclusionary rule and sort of the erosion of it over the last several years, and the decision that come out of this court in late last year, December or so, Sims, talked about the costs of the benefit of the exclusionary rule. Here you have, I don't have personally a lot of sympathy for Mr. Barnett. He's a felon. He's walking around with a gun. And that's not a good situation. And counsel for the government says this is just a very minimal intrusion here, because Barnett was stopped, the gun was found, he was exonerated quickly for not having been involved in the robbery. How do you see this case fitting into the recent trend regarding the exclusionary rule?
Well, I don't think there's anything that minimizes the requirements under the Fourth Amendment for a Terry stop. And in fact, I believe it was Judge Posner in the Bloomfield case that recently in dicta spoke about how easy it is for an officer to throw in information that really is, from an objective point of view, could go either way. If the court is asking me, is this the kind of case that the Fourth Amendment search and seizure law and Terry stop should be overturned, I would say absolutely not.
Well, we can't overturn Terry versus Ohio.
In every Fourth Amendment case, we're usually before the court because there's something to be suppressed. And it goes back to the concept that whether it was Miranda or one of our many cases in the past that dealt with the protection of the rights in those cases of defendants, of people who are being charged with the crimes, that those also protect those that aren't being charged with crimes from such searches and seizures. And in this case, to compare it to Eskew, where the officers actually knew that someone was coming to a specific location for a drug deal just because he didn't have the car that was originally believed, or in Swift, where the license plate numbers are slightly off, but all the other factors fit, simply is not a justified analysis. In this case, there was not particularized and articulable suspicion. And not overruling this case exposes virtually anyone in that residential community who may have been walking down the street at 9 a.m. in the morning to a stop and a search by the police. And we would ask you to remand in this case.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.